Greetings, this is James Gillen. I'm your host tonight. We've got another great show. We're going to bring on John Kelly. And John Kelly's been pretty much a standard, you know, with AzUS Talk Radio and some of the other shows. And he's got some great new information. I want to cover a few little things first and talk about the Shaka movement here in Hawaii, where there's a massive movement right now to create a moratorium on GMOs and hold back this craziness going on here on the island. They've just, some of the islands here, the Monsanto is just decimated, you know, with their chemicals and GMOs and everything else. And, you know, the people are getting sick, the school children are getting sick, the excessive spray. I don't know how many combinations of sprays they're using to test out all their products, but it's been a real mess here. And so there's a major movement, the Shaka movement. I think it's shaka.com if you want to check it out. And I've been involved in that program and getting the word out. And it looks like they're going to create a moratorium and just shut it down and just say, okay, until you can prove this is safe, you can't continue. And they have all the evidence proving that it isn't safe. So they have, you know, all the rats full of tumors. They've done all the research, and they have exactly why they're full of tumors and the prions and all the little creatures that were created due to this insane effort to totally dominate and control nature. And basically, when you get down to it, it just looks like a genocidal program when you get down to the research and look at it. It looks like they are willing participants in the death of millions of people, you know, in the long run. So I know it sounds harsh, but that's the deal, you know. And so check out who's investing in the GMOs, the chemtrails, and all the other little programs out there. And maybe it's time to stop worshiping these people and take them to task for what they're doing. There's a lot of other things unfolding, but I'm not going to go there. I just wanted to talk about that because it's a very important topic to my heart and to so many others. You know, living on a retreat center where we try to do everything as natural and close to the earth as possible, you know, between the GMOs and the sprays and the chemtrails and all the other stuff going on, it's making it harder and harder to just grow your own food and keep the environment pure and safe, and you know, the water's clean and etc. So with that being said, I want to welcome John on the show. John, are you with us?
Sure, I'm James. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been. You know, we're in the thick of winter. I guess spring is on the horizon. I last was on the property at the ranch in October of 2013 and collecting the last of my UFO videos from that amazing site. And there were so many exciting things that happened throughout that season, so many great times and great people and synergies, teamwork happening not only on the Field of Dreams, but in the conference hall, in the kitchen, and in all the casual conversations that happen on site when people, like-minded people, get together and share and explore together.
Oh, yeah. You know, and some of that footage, I know there's a lot of people from Japan here, and Greg Sullivan with JSETI has brought another group here to Maui. And for those who don't know, I'm in Hawaii right now on the island of Maui. And so I apologize for all the bird singing and all the external noise. But the thing about Maui is they don't really have a lot of windows. They use a lot of screens. And so that's just the way it is over here. But you're totally, you know, communing with nature. And I'm looking out to a beautiful little jungle. And it's full of birds that come to listen to the show, it seems like. Because every time we start to do the show or do clearing work, they all show up and start singing. So it's a good backdrop anyway. But, you know, one of the things that they keep bringing up over and over is that footage where, and I'm not sure if I know you cataloged it, and I don't know if you filmed it or I filmed it, when that one ship flew over the Japanese group and powered up. And then I told him, I said, well, call on them again, ask them to power up, they'll do it again. And then it powered up again the second time.
Yeah, I think that in my immediate recall, there is some footage that I've published on my YouTube site that shows you in real time predicting a power up incident, and it is when the Japanese audience is in attendance on the field. you instruct them to pay attention that the object will power up, the object that's being tracked at that moment. And in fact, it does power up, much to everyone's amazement, surprise, and wonder.
We're getting a little feedback for some reason. I don't know why, but we'll just continue.
Okay.
So, yeah, considering the topics.
I'm hearing you clearly. Is there echo or something on my side?
Yeah, a little bit of echo, but I think it'll be okay.
All right.
You know, I know you wanted to talk about Edward Snowden and the government troll handbook and a few other things that tonight. So we might as well just get into it. So what's new in the world of Edward Snowden?
Well, my column, the Vancouver UFO Examiner, has run a series exploring the Edward Snowden disclosures, the leaks, the alleged files that he apparently stole from the NSA, and all of the uproar and controversy surrounding this case. Now, the unique angle that I brought to the story, unlike pretty well every other reporter in journalism, is that I studied the testimony of Edward Snowden on two of his broadcast interviews, one that was released via the Guardian newspaper and the other on North German television, NDR. I studied it from the perspective of UFO disclosure, and I produced a brief series of reports starting in June of 2013, in which I identified encrypted communications in the statements of Edward Snowden where he was describing UFOs. Mm-hmm. And this at that time, June 10th, 2013, nobody in the news media, mainstream or alternative, was linking Edward Snowden to the UFO phenomenon. It was the story was polarized as to whether Edward Snowden was a traitor or a hero. And that polarization has colored the topic even to the present day. There are essentially two camps. One camp that vilifies him as a traitor who's betrayed the secrets of the United States to the enemy, so to speak. And the other camp, which idolizes him as a hero, as a people's hero who's breached the firewall and compartmentalization of top secret America to raise to public discourse questions concerning mass surveillance, the diminishment of human rights, invasion of privacy, and so on, all these implications of the mass NSA surveillance programs. Ron Paul reportedly has pointed out that the crimes that Edward Snowden is accused of by his vilifiers relate to doing trade with the enemy, you know, sharing secrets with the enemy. But in a de facto sense, what Edward Snowden has really done, and I think many people agree, is he simply took the NSA secrets and shared them with the public. And so by vilifying Edward Snowden in such a way, that stating that he's doing, you know, he's trading with the enemy, it really characterizes the American public as the government's enemy in that sense. And so the rhetoric is quite twisted and the themes are quite deep. But really, my reporting in some ways does not attempt to address the question of whether or not Snowden is a hero or a villain, in as much as I'm more interested in simply trying to understand what possible insight he could shed on the UFO phenomena. And as I said in a title or an article entitled "Prism Mining UFO Data Targets False Flag ET Invasion as Pretext to Space Wars," I reported on my analysis and interpretation of Edward Snowden's remarks to the Guardian newspaper that were videotaped in Hong Kong last year, in which I deciphered a comment which I claim it was unconscious communications on his part and involuntary disclosure concerning UFOs in that moment when he was discussing security and safety issues pertaining to his case. I thought this was quite remarkable. Now, RT News' Abby Martin has said that it is the role of the journalist to decipher or decode what it is that the newsmakers are telling us. So in my role as a journalist, I ran with that story, and I was the only person reporting on links between Edward Snowden and the UFO issue at that time and for quite a long period of time. Subsequently, several things happened. One is I went to the Guardian newspaper during their live Q&A session online on July 17th of 2013 to ask Edward Snowden about that the then internationally syndicated news article that I'd written discussing his potential concerns about mass data collections of UFO information from people talking about it on their cell phones or over Skype or on Facebook in the interests of building a case for a false flag ET invasion scenario, not unlike the one that was reportedly described by Dr. Wernher von Braun, the famous NASA space rocket scientist, mm-hmm. who told his colleague Dr. Carol Rosen in the 1970s, as her testimony indicates, that he had anticipated several false flags, waves of false flags that we foisted over the public in the interest of amassing a police state and diminishing the rights and freedoms of people in what was intended to be a democracy at one time. Mm-hmm. So, I thought this was a very interesting parallelism, and this was the angle that I approached the story from, that Edward Snowden had unconscious concerns, and I wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to bring the question to him directly through the Guardian's live Q&A that was held on their website online. So like hundreds of other people, I posted my question to their website in hopes that it might be considered by the reviewers and the interviewers to be brought to Mr. Snowden. It was something that was in the news. It was already a matter of public discourse. This is an internationally syndicated article. Well, to my surprise, not only was my question ignored, but in fact, it was torn down from the Guardian site in an act of prior restraint or censorship. And so I began to feel that as a result of that action, that the Snowden disclosures were stage managed, not unlike a political campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was not like a person off the street, a member of the public, you know, having a bright idea and picking up the phone and calling in a report somewhere out of their sense of patriotism or otherwise, just, you know, an uncontrived type of report. It seemed Edward Snowden, his disclosures were surrounded by campaign and strategy and other kinds of actions that really much more resemble a political campaign for a candidate. And I found that level of contrivance to be sort of antagonistic to the image that was being painted of him as some kind of people's hero. It seemed there was many more layers of sophistication involved than something, you know, like a member of the public might be involved in it. It seemed more than just a little bit contrived. And as time has unfolded, those contrivances have become more and more clear. And I will get to that a little bit later as to what, you know, what latest revelations are surrounding the Edward Snowden campaign. Certainly there are many critics of the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know people are kind of mixed feelings about that. They're saying that, you know, he's a double agent, or he's there to just control the energy into a certain, or the, you know, consciousness into a certain box, you might say. But, you know, because there's other whistleblowers that have come out with a lot of the similar same information and have gone more into detail that have been basically ignored.
And so what one whistleblower, Sybelle Edmonds, has pointed out, and she is the former FBI translator whose testimony was struck from the record for the 9/11 commission. Mm-hmm. She was also subject to a gag order for over, I think, half a dozen years before she was finally allowed to give some testimony concerning what had happened to her and her observations while working for the FBI in that capacity. She has pointed out on Boiling Frogs Post that one of the dimensions of the Snowden issue is serving to normalize mass surveillance and illegal wiretapping and invasions of privacy within the public, because NSA surveillance has become a matter of weekly news. In other words, the marketing of the Edward Snowden campaigns is very strategic, and we've been subject to a deluge of NSA surveillance related news for months. And one of the consequences of that, one of the understandable consequences of such exposure on a mass public level, is simply that we're becoming accustomed to the idea that we're being spied upon, and that it is becoming normalized as just a part of everyday life in North America. These are now accepted as normal conditions due to the mass marketing of these ideas through this piecemeal disclosure. And at the same time, Sybelle Edmonds has pointed out that there has been nothing really new or revelatory in any of this whistleblowing. He hasn't told us anything we didn't already know, or that people didn't inside the security agencies didn't already know or hadn't already been talking about. So I think that's very valid. Somebody with credentials like Sibel Edmonds is a critic of the entire process, and for very good reason. I will elaborate on that a little later in the interview. Now, my connection with the story was, again, that I encountered censorship through the Guardian newspaper, which was one of the key media portals that first brought the Snowden story to international attention, the other being, the Washington Post. And I wrote a story about the Guardian's interview of Edward Snowden in Hong Kong, wherein I decoded UFO-related information. And I said, well, this guy's got a connection with the UFO issue. I'm not too sure what it is, but I'm going to run with this. Now, it was late in 2013 that a second story emerged that was run on Tehran's Fars news agency concerning third-party reports from undisclosed sources that Edward Snowden's files contain information about tall, white, Nazi extraterrestrials running the United States. Uh-huh. And parallel to that, Fars News also picked up my article on the PRISM surveillance and and linking Edward Snowden to UFOs. They ran both articles concurrently on their website. And so what began to happen on sites like Facebook was that people would start to confabulate or confuse, either willfully or by mistake, my reporting with this unsubstantiated, unfounded report concerning tall, white, alien Nazis running the United States, based on unnamed third-party sources. It was obviously next to garbage in terms of news. But that report became an instrument for attacking my reporting on sites like Facebook. And I also learned that particular report was used as a propaganda instrument in inflaming anti-Iranian sentiments on major news sites, major news television channels like Fox News. Mm-hmm. Fox News, Huffington Post, many other news outlets ran with that Fars News story, which has really no credibility. It's based on undisclosed anonymous sources. They're talking about documents that no one has seen. It's really garbage as far as news. Whereas I was running with evidence-based reporting. I had in Edward Snowden's own voice my interpretation of his claims related to UFOs, linking Edward Snowden to UFOs. And so, by the end of 2013, this is where the case stood. A second report had emerged from any perspective that is more than naive or sophomoric. That second report was a propaganda piece. It was a disinformation piece. And in fact, it was something that appeared as an instrument to discredit honest journalism that had already emerged in June of 2013. What I ran was an honest story. In other words, I disclosed my sources, I disclosed my methods, and I disclosed my findings. I operated in complete transparency. That's quite different than citing unnamed third-party sources and unseen documents, and sensational claims. My claim was very conservative. Talking about UFOs in the 21st century is not extreme left-wing propaganda. It's something that's quite normal in most strata of society. Whereas extreme rhetoric concerning tall white aliens running the U.S. government and being Nazis with no documents to substantiate, not naming any names.
Yeah,
that is just that's really there's no comparison. It's not apples to apples comparison. But that was the status of this issue at the end of the year. Now, a second interview emerged in January of 2014, late January. NDR, North German Television, interviewed Edward Snowden now in Moscow as a guest of the Russian government. And it was very, very interesting interview. A second opportunity to evaluate his statements. And as somebody who has a longstanding reputation as a communications expert, as an analyst who decrypts unconscious comments from world leaders and derives factual, vettable information pertaining to world events like the Iraq War. I was reporting on the Iraq War 2 years before it began. Mm-hmm. It was incumbent upon me to take a second look and to see if I could either discount the initial report or perhaps deepen my insight into what Edward Snowden was really trying to say in an involuntary way. Well, my story, the title ran as Edward Snowden's Psychic Human ETs Revealed. Again, that's in the Vancouver UFO Examiner. And there was some really interesting information that emerged through the NDR interview, which only deepened my perception that Edward Snowden, through his experience, either personal life experience or through his work in American intelligence agencies such as the CIA and the NSA, had a connection with the UFO and ET phenomena. And I found three messages that I thought were meaningful in that second interview, one of which stated, "Knows an alien, variable alien, we leave with it." A second message is stated, "First I prove the alien heard our memory." And a third message stating, "The alien that is human, then their blood is human." And so having gone into the second interview with an understanding that Edward Snowden had some connection to UFOs, I found myself with three sets of communications now that were all talking about extraterrestrials, using the word alien. I really found this quite compelling. It's been said about the Snowden archives that he had sequestered materials away, or someone had done so on his behalf with third parties as an insurance policy in case something happened to him, that there would be mass release of documents that would be difficult for governments to deal with. And this idea of a variable alien, we leave with it, it made sense to me that this was a file that he held that had something to do with extraterrestrials that he took from the NSA, and that it was a bargaining chip that may be used later. The second message, talking about aliens that hear our memories, well, what other than clairaudience and psychic phenomena could that refer to? Extraterrestrials, aliens that hear our memory. I thought that was very compelling. And of course, James, I know you're very sympathetic to this idea of being in such rich contact yourself and precognitive contact that you demonstrated repeatedly for all of us so many times. And thirdly, this alien that is human with human blood, this was remarkable to me in the sense of considering possible medical tests or other procedures that may have been conducted using living extraterrestrials or the corpses of extraterrestrials retrieved from crash sites, and conclusions drawn through genetic research or otherwise linking the extraterrestrials to the human population, implying an ancestral tie, or at a minimum that that these ETs are like us in our humanity, and may even share blood like our blood. So removing the extraterrestrial from the little green man realm into a human-like realm, or something that we can relate to, I thought this was quite compelling. And based on existing testimony, allegory, or what other evidence exists in the UFO community, all of these themes lined up. It seemed to make a lot of sense. There were three distinct messages, and it also fit into what I wrote about as the Mineta Standard, which is the rule of three that was invoked by the Secretary of Transportation and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient, Norman Mineta. He told the 9/11 Commission when he was talking about ceasing all air traffic over the United States on September 11th, 2001, he said, "When you see one of something happen, it's an accident." So in terms of what I was reporting, if I only had one message, who's to say that there's anything more to it than just a coincidence, an accident? He further stated, "When you see two of the same thing happening, it's a trend." Well, as I began to accumulate messages in my study related to this, I was identifying what appeared to be an emerging trend in the communications of Edward Snowden. But Norman Mineta really capped it off when he said, finally, when you see three, it's a plan. Well, there's something intelligent going on. The rule of three informed Norman Mineta's decision as the Secretary of Transportation for the United States to cease all air traffic on that day. That was his waypoint, his reference point as a professional, as a high-level professional in the George W. Bush administration at the White House. He was calling shots on a national level for a multi-billion-dollar air transport industry where tens of thousands of people, if not more, their lives were at stake. I mean, professionals making transportation safety decisions based on the rule of three tells me that that's sound grounds for reasoning for that is applicable to other types of decision making. And so, by presenting three alien related messages, all derived from different vocabulary, in the testimony of Edward Snowden given to North German television NDR from Moscow in January 2014, I really felt it complied with that Mineta standard. We had three examples. It was certain that some intelligent planning, some kind of program was involved that brought Edward Snowden to disclose these things and in such an involuntary way. And so there I was, facing even further censorship and challenges and smear campaigns and defamatory comments from Facebook administrators who were censoring my posts and barring me from their groups, as well as group members rabidly gathering around me. And I was involved in radio interview situations with hosts who were absolutely going off the charts ballistic at the idea of me even beginning to discuss NSA-related issues. This is in December and January of 2000, December through 2013 and January 2014. You know, I took away from some of those encounters that the uptick in hostility that I was encountering on the air and in the social media was an indicator of a country that was prepared to go to war. Because, James, as you know, under wartime conditions, the old trope is that loose lips sink ships. Mm-hmm. And so freedom of speech is one of the first victims of a war. People say that truth is absolutely the first victim of a war, but it seemed to me that the pressure to dissuade me from reporting on this, to challenge my very character as a journalist in when I was acting in such an open and transparent way, was an indicator of tremendous tensions within the United States military, intelligence, and Homeland Security agencies concerning foresight about a country that was prepared to go to war. And of course, as we know, James, in the last few days, while Russia has moved troops into the Ukraine, into Crimea, the United States also has ships en route, and there are reports of NATO troops landing in the Ukraine as well, which means that we are now facing a scenario. As of right now, in real time, we're facing a potential World War III-related conflict involving Russia, the United States, Canada as well.
Yeah, it seems like that's an ongoing thing. I figure if I'm not getting a lot of flack, if I don't have a lot of things being tossed at me, I'm probably missing the mark. You know, I'm probably not going to doing as good a job as I should. And I've seen that again and again. It's amazing right here over in Maui. I mean, I decided to do, well, instead of doing a vacation, there was a real strong call to do a lot of counseling work and a lot of healing work and help out with the Shaka movement, you know, with the GMOs and the other things. And the old saying, no rest for the wicked, you know, but it's kind of interesting. But it was ongoing. But I saw, I'm going to put a flyer out And I put a post out about the vortexes that are opening and the portals that are starting to open up. And we're just getting flooded with light and energy and higher consciousness and beings coming in and things like that. And a lot of us here were instrumental in helping that happen, you know, working with that energy. But boy, the heat that I got from that and the posts that I got were unbelievable and just accused me of everything under the sun from, I don't trust him because he sells DVDs, you know, or I don't trust him because, you know, he charges money for counseling, which is on donation basis, basically, which it seems like a vast majority of them seem to not have any money, so we don't turn anybody away. But, just, you know, all of these things, it seems like they, no matter what, they have to come up, they come up with something. And I don't even respond to these people, but, you know, in mass, I would say, well, you know, to these people, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing to help out in the awakening and healing of humanity and the earth? And how much time and energy are you putting towards it? And also, too, you know, how do you value your time and energy? Do you put any value on that? And why should people who are on the forefront taking the hits out here, why should they, you know, live as paupers, you know, live totally broke? I mean, I live a very simple life and I definitely spend a lot more money on these projects than I do, than I get back from them. But you know, it's just the nonsense that you have to deal with, and, you know, I think a lot of these people are just disinformation agents. They're trolls and they're that's what they're there to just create a problem where none exists.
Yeah, dogma means, you know, in the absence of any rational thought or credible case making, people are just repeating the same thing over and over again. And so this dogmatic behavior is certainly indicative of someone using a playbook rather than someone thinking.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these people are living with their mother in the basement, you know, and everything's being paid for, you know, and you just go, well, you know, do you have a job? You know, are you working in the highest and best good of humanity on the earth? You know, what are you doing? It's like you get these people and they're just very miserable and they want everybody else to be miserable as well. And I just don't give them any energy whatsoever. I almost find it amusing. Sometimes I play with them, actually. I'll throw a little zinger back, but most of the time I just don't even respond to it.
I appreciate that. Well, you know, what happened on the timeline of my reporting was simply that by February 24th of this year, a website called The Intercept had released 3 UFO images as part of a 50-slide PowerPoint presentation, what it described as the Edward Snowden Archives of Secret Files. This document was entitled The Art of Deception, Training for a New Generation of Online Covert Operations. And this is being referred to as the government handbook for internet trolls.
Wow.
This document, when it was released, suddenly emerged as independent third-party evidence that was linking Edward Snowden to UFOs and, in fact, functioned then as a claim, support for my claim that I'd first written about 7 months earlier. Edward Snowden, via the document, The Art of Deception, Training for a New Generation of Online Covert Operations, is now widely accepted as having a connection to UFO phenomena, if only on the basis that 3 of the slides in that PowerPoint presentation are slides of UFO images. Now, people may say, you know, so what does this really tell us? There's not a lot of text accompanying the images. You know, what is the significance of that? And my reporting doesn't really intend to try to speculate as to what they may or may not have been talking about. The point is simply that I first linked Edward Snowden to UFOs in June of 2013 when nobody was talking about it. And now it's widely accepted that via what is reported to be his archives, Edward Snowden had UFO information in those archives, and it's now a matter of public record. So through struggling against some adversity, my reporting prevailed, and I think that it's very exciting to see after this many years that I'm still able to report in a way that anticipates what later become headline events. I'm beating the headlines on Edward Snowden issues, and one way we could say that this was acknowledged is that my story entitled Leaked Document Confirms 2013 Examiner Report Linking Edward Snowden to UFOs, that ran for over 24 hours on the Wall Street Journal website on their Edward Snowden news page.
Wow.
So there's consensus in editorial newsrooms that this was real news. I mean, the dates and timestamps on the servers for Examiner, Google News, et cetera, be very difficult to tamper with, at least from my level. So that serves as independent documentation. As a timeline was established, a fact, and in spite of whatever these trolls and censors were trying to say about my reporting online, the facts remain the facts. The truth emerged in the course of that study, and so it was a worthwhile study on my part. And the clips are very interesting. All of those articles are linked to videos with the clips, so people can listen to them on my YouTube channel. And through other media, the audio is available. People can evaluate for themselves. At this point, it doesn't really matter so much if people believe in the phenomena of reflection, or if there's such a thing as a mirror, or if my interpretations are accurate. It's a matter of public record that my report was issued in June 2013, linking Edward Snowden to UFOs, and now it's widely accepted that there's UFO information in the Snowden archives.
Yeah, have you noticed in the field, especially of ufology and other fields, any kind of conspiracy things or whatever? But I noticed ufology almost seems more prevalent. But they have a game they're playing. It's a really good PSYOP game, and what it is called controlled opposition. And so you put the people in the highest positions, you know, the largest radio shows or the largest, and they're planned opposition, and they're there to act as though they are against the government and wanting them to, you know, come clean and do this and do that. And they really rattle their sabers, you know. But in truth, when the real truth comes out and the real information comes out, they won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, and actually they censor it. And so they're there as planned opposition. They plan for them to be opposers and rattle their sword and everything else, but they still totally control the information, you know. And I've seen that, especially with the East SETI Ranch and UFO reporting centers and things of that nature, where, you know, you've seen it too. Thousands of people have been up there and have seen the ships and filmed them themselves, and probably hundreds of thousands now over the past 26 years. But, you know, it's funny how with that much evidence and all the footage that you have as well that you've done there and all the articles you've written and everything else, there's still a major move to censor, you know, this information out there, you know, by those people that have been put into those, you know, any PSYOPs program, a good PSYOPs program will control all aspects of the information flow.
Well, a good example of this is the television show on this sci-fi channel titled Uncovering Aliens. Now, Uncovering Aliens production crew was supposed to be on site at the East SETI Ranch in 2013. Mm-hmm. And they aborted their scheduled taping over what they described as an injury amongst their staff. But it's obvious that they proceeded to tape a whole bunch of episodes, which are now running on the air. And I recently vetted one of those episodes where their team went down to South Carolina to investigate reports of UFOs there. And my evaluation of that production was they were making fraudulent representations of all sorts. But in particular, they were showing things like reflections of sunlight on a lens. Claiming that that's a UFO, and then most excitingly, they were creating computer generated graphics and portraying their investigative team as looking up in the sky while the computer generated graphics are dancing over their heads, and pretending that this is a UFO incident. And it was just it was evident to me that this whole production was garbage and disinformation, and that this was fraud on a national scale. So they skipped the East SETI Ranch. Where the footage that we've produced there between your camera, my camera, and all the other guests who've been there over the years far supersedes anything that's making it to television now. This show is just it's a disinformation front, and the evidence is the fraud that they're committing on the air that anyone who's been in front of a UFO could tell. It's utter nonsense. I mean, it's they should really move this up to Saturday morning and run it after Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Because that's about the standard that it complies with. It's a cartoon. This is clownery. It's tomfoolery. It's nonsense, and it really is garbage. This is our junk food culture, James. In our mainstream, that we're being fed junk food for the mind, which is making us stupid. And this is also one of the consequences of the top secret America culture of secrecy, is that it's fomenting mass ignorance. And a society that is ignorant is guaranteed to face catastrophe due to that ignorance. So this is the recklessness that's happening at high levels within society, whose members, elite members, at the same time are fomenting criminal wars by subverting democratic societies like the elected government of the Ukraine. You know, which brings us back to the Edward Snowden disclosures, because it's just been identified that the Intercept's publisher, the gentleman mm-hmm. who publishes the Intercept, is actually funded the Ukraine protests.
Yeah,
alongside the U.S. government. So this is Glenn Greenwald's boss, Glenn Greenwald, the journalist who's been endowed with the responsibility of the Snowden archives, who's reporting on them through the Intercept. That site, it poses as a site that's pro-public, pro-human rights, pro-civil rights, with these pseudo-subversive journalists. But the publisher, who's also the founder of eBay, is actively funding color revolutions in the Ukraine, subverting a democratically elected government. And now, as of right now, leading to the possibility of a shooting war between Russia, the United States, and the other NATO nations, including Canada. Prime Minister Harper of Canada has pledged his full support behind the people of the Ukraine against Russia. So the stage is being set to suck us all into some insane war that is really antagonistic to all human values. The integrity, destabilization. Well, the integrity of society is very important, and the destabilization of societies is one of the primary missions of organizations like the CIA. So
yeah, and the other outfit agencies, they and Illuminati, and we could go on and on and on. I mean, as you go up that ladder of power and wealth, you know, it ends up in a very dark area that's with unseen negative influences that really care nothing for humanity or the earth. They don't care if you totally decimate the land and kill every living thing, you know, including men, women, children, you know, pregnant mothers. They'll bomb a whole city and just lay it to ruin just to, you know, for that shock and awe, that just for the fear, you know, and the fear campaign and the other things that they're doing. You know, and I'm wondering when people are going to figure this one out, because you know, I've bit this over the head. I really think about it. You know, you've got your depleted uranium, your endless wars going on there, all the shots they hit the troops up with and just experiment on them, and they're coming back with all these, you know, disorders and problems and things like that. And then they've got the Gulf War syndrome, you know, that they have to deal with that as well. And, you know, they're just being punished on every level out there, and they're just basically corporate thugs, you know, to steal the resources from other countries. And they're starting to figure that out right now. But, you know, you look at the GMOs, you know, the chemtrails and everything, you go, who's in charge here? You know, who's running this planet? And if anybody thinks some very evolved, lovely beings are running this planet right now, I mean, they're just brain dead. I mean, it's so obvious. You know, it's basically the war industry, the big pharma is running things, the oil companies are running things, and that's why we don't have free energy or the cures for anything, you know. That's why we don't have peace. It's because it's all bad for business. And I don't know when people are going to finally connect all the dots and figure this one out, but I don't think we have a lot of time left to do that one.
Well, this remorselessness that you're describing is very characteristic of the internet trolls who are employed as operatives in top secret America. Top secret America, according to the Washington Post, employs 750,000 people in the various agencies, and there's a very substantial number of them are working in cyber warfare, information warfare, online, in the social networks. A Canadian study titled "Trolls Just Want to Have Fun" that was produced by psychologists. I think it was the University of Manitoba. They found that the trolls online tend to have dark personality traits and show signs of sadism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism, which means that these people they are excited by acts of torture, by remorseless acts, antisocial behavior, and by manipulation. This is characteristic of the trolls. Well, now that we've seen the government handbook for internet trolls, that document titled "The Art of Deception," that was authored by British intelligence and was used to train NSA personnel. Now that we've seen the government is training trolls, online trolls, we can recognize that those institutions, the human resources departments, are actually profiling the candidates based on the propensity for psychopathy, for sadism, for Machiavellianism. This is a candidate profile for a suitable hire in a position of a government-sponsored internet troll. So the trickle-down of the psychology, that sick psychology that foments criminal wars and leads to incidents of illegal kidnapping, illegal torture, the horrors that are done under the fog of war that are committed against human rights on a wide scale, that have been committed by all of the powers. I mean, Russia has an atrocious human rights record in the war against the Chechens. I mean, the they were mutilating people in internment camps and torturing them intentionally as an act of war against the population to injure the future generations through sadistic and what were described as satanic ritual acts against the predominantly Muslim population. So this sickness isn't just in North America, but you know, the better angels have to prevail in all our societies. The good people of Russia, the good people of the Ukraine, the good people of the United States, the good people of Canada have to become active and get excited about upholding ideals and values in a culture where everything is slipping and sliding and where the social pressure is pushing and promoting sadism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism, which are really irredeemable and undefensible values by any standard. But I say the human resources departments and these intelligence agencies are hiring based on those characteristics. These are becoming conditions of employment. If you can demonstrate that you're a sadist, if you can demonstrate that you're a psychopath, if you can summon Machiavellian manipulative behavior on a regular basis, then you may have a future career working for the NSA.
Yeah, and that's a pretty sick society, you know, not in the good way, but it just, you know, to me, I was really looking at, you know, we're talking about that problem with Snowden, you know, and like, is he this huge debate, you know, is he the good guy? Is he, you know, planned opposition, you know, is he a shill, you know, what is he, you know, everybody's going over that. And I go, well, let's just get down to basics. You know, what about the Fourth Amendment? You know, your right to privacy. Was that, you know, subjugated? Was that totally trampled? You know, what else do we have to know? You know, all this other stuff is just smoke and mirrors. You know, the bottom line is that we have no privacy. We haven't had any privacy. They've been reading our emails, our listening to our phone calls, our texts, everything. And I've known that for years. I always block out my emails. I don't get them for days sometimes, and I have to send a message, you know, an email out saying, you know, please, you know, can you Alphabet Agency share, you know, can you share? You're tying up my line, and please send my emails back to me in a timely manner. You know, and all of a sudden I just get loaded with all these emails come in, you know, some 3 days late, you know, and things like that. So. It's kind of hilarious. It's like when they know you're looking at them, all of a sudden they just, everything comes through really fast, you know, but it's just ridiculous. I mean, what's the point? Why don't they just go out and, you know, put a garden in, you know, or build something or do something conscious or, you know, something towards the awakened healing process. Why, what kind of consciousness would put all their time and energy into these just, you know, insidious programs?
Well, one of the indications is that these people are simply too lazy to go find something better to do with their time. But I wanted to say that in spite of the controversy circulating around not only Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, and maybe for very good reason, I am sympathetic to two of the messages that have emerged from their campaign, one of which is Edward Snowden stating that all of this all of these decisions about human rights, rights to privacy, rights to not be subject to unreasonable search and seizure, have not been subject to public debate. And his campaign was to bring these materials to public debate. And he was effective in as much as the White House was compelled to respond to his disclosures in a number of press briefings. The president had to speak to these issues and had to answer to it to a very angry public. The public is so agitated that the states, multiple states, are now engaged in passing bills that would penalize those who provide electrical services, hot and cold running water services to NSA facilities, because the states are saying that this conduct against the fundamental rights in the Constitution is below the standard that we accept for the people who live in our state. What the NSA is doing is below our standards. It's not acceptable. We don't want you here. We're going to find ways, legal means, to invite you to leave. So yeah. there are bills being moved through in a number of states to deny basic services to NSA facilities. I think that's great news, and it really shows a conscience in the public and at the legislative level. I hope those people get the support they need and those bills pass and are successful. But the other message that emerged from the campaign from Glenn Greenwald in this latest report was how he recognized that the agencies are attempting to control, infiltrate, manipulate, and warp online discourse, and in doing so are compromising the integrity of the internet itself. In other words, the internet, which has held the promise of offering freedom of communications, freedom of expression, sharing of ideas on an unprecedented scale, is becoming so polluted with noise generated by these paid-for shills that its communications online are becoming meaningless. It's becoming meaningless when people with no photograph in their Facebook profile and no profile are approaching us to friend us and interact with us and so on. It's becoming meaningless, and this is a danger. You know, the promise of the internet as a medium for public engagement is being lost to this reckless campaign for secrecy and censorship. And I think I'm sympathetic to both of those messages. So irrespective of the long-term validity of either Snowden or Greenwald as players in, you know, the world of ideas, I'm sympathetic to those messages. They resonate with me. And like you, James, I'm someone who's been on the front lines of disclosure, of whistleblowing. I was reporting the Pentagon's war plans 2 years before the Iraq war on radio. You got to know that I walked over those security lines that are on that operate on so many dimensions, and I've been aware of these challenges for over a dozen years firsthand. So, I think there is some meaning in spite of whatever corrupt forces are also at play. There's some meaning to these discussions. It says something about mass apathy and the need for awakening in a collective population, and the need to excite constructive action at legislative levels, at meaningful lawful ways that support the development of healthy communities. I think that all of this staged operative funding is antagonistic to fundamental human values, family values, community values by any standard in any culture, and it portends a really diminished future. I think that the people, in other words, who are exploiting the rights and freedoms of others for the sake of a paycheck, mm-hmm. are despicable in those actions and should consider resigning from their positions and going finding a better form of employment. And if they can't find better employment, then they should create businesses that serve the communities in meaningful ways instead of making a buck today to subvert their neighbor tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of other technologies seem to be coming out now and other ways of getting around this where they have more secure systems and offshore systems and things of that nature. It's quite a market, you know, that they've created. But it would be nice, you know, to take all that money and just put it towards, you know, feeding the hungry, you know, housing the poor, you know, doing rebuilding the infrastructure, you know, which is failing right now, and you know, creating more jobs and things like that. These aren't jobs, you know. The jobs that these guys are doing right now, they aren't jobs. They're just like, you know, paid assassins, whether it be character assassins or whatever assassins. They just assassinate your character or you on a mental or emotional level, tie up all your time. You know, that's not a job. I don't even know what to call it. It's just, I don't know if you can come up with a word for it, but
I would say that is, you know, talk about your dead enders. There's just no future. There's no future in seeking a career that undermines the interests of the collective. People who want to take on the universe are going to be swallowed up in a tidal wave of inevitable response. The karma that they're accumulating by causing injury to so many on a mass scale is going to there will be recourse to justice that they will face either in this lifetime or the next. I mean, I don't know about you, but I do know about you, James, and I know that neither you nor I would want to reincarnate as an insect, but some people think that's the future for the black magicians, and we can see that they are attempting to hypnotize and cast a demonic spell over the minds of the public and subvert people and prepare new communities of victims for pedophilic agendas, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. which good people are fighting against tooth and nail at great personal risk. I think that the example set by those individuals, the small players who may not have a big voice in the mainstream, are willing to take such risks for the sake of building a better future, are the example for the people in higher positions that a little bit of self-sacrifice is called for in a situation where otherwise it appears that the population is being thrown under the bus, that we're so willing to sacrifice everybody else for our little short-term agenda, for a few bucks on our paycheck, for a little raise or a title on our office door. We're so willing to subvert everybody else's rights, but there's a massive karmic debt that's unavoidable that goes with that. And quite frankly, there's just, you know, that's... I think ultimately those operatives are depressed, they're bored, and this is why, again, as you're able to point out, that their playbook behavior is so predictable. They're bored, they're depressed, they're demoralized, they don't really like the jobs. They were hired because someone in human resources thought they were a sadist or a psychopath or they were Machiavellian, but that's not in the truest sense. You know, in classical cultures, that was never seen as the ultimate road to happiness, as the fruition of human potential. So anyone who's got a grip like yourself, James, on our potential for bliss, a potential for ultimate happiness in life, what it really means to be a human being, and to live a spiritual life, knows that we need to excite those passions for a better way of life in the public. And you know, I only hope that we have enough time, given the clouds of war that are fomenting around the world between the major players. I hope that we have enough time to realize some of those ambitions in our lifetimes. I hope that we, as a society, can really begin to fulfill our potential and overcome the burden of these terrible legacies that mm-hmm. we've been saddled with, and that we are continuing to saddle our future generations with today. Yeah.
Well, it seems like, you know, as Ezekiel said, the last great war is going to be with nature. And I think nature is going to reflect back to us, you know, this nonsense. And you know, there's an old saying, nature's always last at bat. You know, we're out of time right now, unfortunately. But what's the best way that people can get a hold of you to partake of any of your resources?
I'm a clinician and I work by telephone. People can contact me on my website. It's yourinnervoice.com, yourinnervoice.com, or people can call my toll-free number, 1-888-453-0751. James, I constantly hear from your fans who talk about how inspired they are to have seen your work and be exposed to what you're doing at the East Eddy Ranch and around the world. So I just wanted to share with you how proud I am that I've had a chance to work with you as well, knowing all the good feelings that you've generated over the years amongst the public.
Oh, thank you so much. And I couldn't do it without, you know, your help and other people's help and, you know, people holding down the ranch right now while I'm in Maui, and Nate and Jana and Nathan and everybody else that's kind of putting their butts on the line here. But anyway, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We're out of time.